Quick shout out to our sponsor, Dealfront. Struggling to reach decision makers? Dealfront has you covered. It's your all-in-one platform to target ideal leads and close deals. Dealfront stands out with live European data in multiple languages, giving you insights and access others can't match. Finding the right decision makers is now just a few clicks away. Dealfront combines market signals, web visitors, and EU company databases, all while ensuring GDPR compliance. Ready to transform your sales game? Get your free demo at dealfront.com. That's dealfront.com. Or check the link in the description and show notes. Elevate your sales strategy with Dealfront. Hello, listeners and watchers, and welcome to a very, very special chapter in the SDR Disco Call Show. This is one I have been waiting a very long time for. I'm super pumped to have our guest on. But before we begin, if this is your first time joining, this show is all about the world of sales development, primarily with people working in tech sales. And what we want to do is find interesting people to figure out how do they get into this profession, what have they learned, and what can we share to you to help you become happy sellers. So if you're listening to this in your local podcast platform, make sure that you give us a rating and share. And if you're watching this on our YouTube channel, make sure that you like, comment, and subscribe down below. Now, this guest is somebody that I fanboy on a lot of his content. I follow him on Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, you name it. And when I asked this lovely person, do you want to come on my show? And he said, yeah. And I was like, oh my God, cool. So without further ado, sir, could you introduce who are you? Where are you based in the world? What do you do for work?
My name is James Say What Sales Buckley, and I have the pleasure of being the host of the Sell Better Daily Sales Show. Check us out, sellbetter.xyz. The best part of my job is that every day I get to bring forward incredible salespeople, sales leaders, and deliver actionable tactical tips that you can take away and use immediately following the show to get better sales results. The second best part of that job is that most of what we do is centered on the buyers. The sellers happen to reap the benefits. That's a very important distinction.
I love that. I love that. James, that is a strong intro, my man. Thank you so much for coming on board. And just for our listeners, where are you based in the world, James?
I am in East Tennessee, the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. It is the slowest and the best place to live in the world. I'll never move away.
Woo! I love that. I love that. And a question that I love to ask all of my guests, outside of sales, James, what are your passions, your hobbies, and interests? What do you want to tell the people?
I'm a massive Lord of the Rings fan, all things Middle Earth, really. A Tolkien fan, to be frank, all through the like first, second, and third age, the Silmarillion, the whole nine. I just got this massive tattoo on my back for like to my tribute to the third age, but no spoilers, right? I have to wait till it's finished for anyone to see it. But that's definitely a passion of mine. Sales is my life. And, you know, because we function in the sales space, often friends and networking and social situations become a hobby. And I like that. That makes me happy. I feed off other people's energy. I am a true extrovert. So I seek that out, right? Another thing I do is I shoot a lot of pool. Pool, I've been playing since I was seven. I play for the American Pool Association. The highest ranking that you can be at a skill level is a 7, and I'm currently ranked a 5, so I do okay.
Jeez, James, I keep learning new things about James, and I freaking love this, and this is going to be a dynamite episode.
I can definitely feel it. I'm a diverse human.
You are indeed, sir, you are indeed. And I see the Instagram stories, I see what you get up to, sir, and it's a, you know, an absolute pleasure. As you can see, listeners and watchers, I'm really fanboying out here. And do you know what really made me happy about James? A few weeks back when we connected, I went all gaga on the Zoom, and James said to me, Neil, I'm just like you. And that put me at such ease. So again, salute to you, sir.
Thank you, man. I hear it a lot. You know, I'll join somebody that's a prospect and we'll hop on a call and they'll say, I feel like I'm talking to a celebrity. While that is extremely flattering, it's so important to not be a victim of instant karma. And I have been a victim of instant karma many times. My ego gets the best of me, and karma will immediately slap you down and make you humble again. So I try to be very cautious about when I brag and when I don't. There's a lot of humble brags that happen. But I always appreciate the love that people show me online and in person. And, you know, that's the stuff that of legend. So thank you for being a follower and a friend and somebody that I like your content too, man. Like, we share each other's content. It is a mutually beneficial relationship. And for those of you listening, that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Dude, that's a lot of hashtag sales love there. I freaking love it. All right. So, audience, as you know, what we normally do, if you're watching this on our YouTube show, what we typically do is go to our guests' LinkedIn profile. And James puts out a lot of great content. But also, you know, this is something I normally do, James, but you've taught me something just before we started recording, because I was normally going to say, I will be putting James's LinkedIn profile
in here. You know, they should come follow, right? Like, they should be seeing the free content. All my content that I put out on social is free, right? So, and it's most of it comes from our guests on the show. Like, I'm not out there saying I'm the legend of sales and you should learn everything from me. I'm saying, like, again, like, let's go back to my profession. I have the pleasure of having access to best sellers in the game all the time.
Yeah.
So you might as well follow along and learn from them every day. There's no excuse to fail at this point, right? Because there's so many resources out there. But this is besides the point. What I told you before is that you were like, oh, I could point people to your LinkedIn. And while I appreciate that and I encourage you to follow me on LinkedIn, don't send me a connection request. And here's why. It's so hard to stay below the cap. There's many people listening to this that don't know. LinkedIn will cap the number of connections that you have at 30,000. That's it. We have no idea why. It's a silly cap, right? Every other platform in the world will allow you to have as many followers or connections as you want. I think Facebook might have a cap now that I think about it, right? The number of friends you can have.
Yeah.
But you can have millions of followers, right? Right? So that's the whole, and this bothers me as a seller, because when you're building a network, you want to build a network full of your prospects, people that buy from you.
Yeah.
Even when you move, you find people that you're already connected and you try to sell something to them. That's the point of having the network.
Yeah. Right?
So I'm very selective about who I allow into my network and why. And I remove people from my network all the time because they're bystanders and I don't want bystanders in my network. I'd rather be an engaged person that's in my network. So I tell people, hop over to Instagram and follow me there because I can have endless followers there.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, or TikTok, right? I have a TikTok as well. You're going to see some fitness stuff there. I've been on a health journey lately. That's just,
I love
bananas.
It.
I've dropped 30 pounds in 5.5 months.
Woo!
Guts, right?
Yeah.
So, and listen, the health journey thing too, like everything goes up and to the right. Yeah. I think what we're talking about here already, and we're on to this like major theme, is this idea of like career growth and trajectory. And I think that's the thing that most sellers, especially new sellers, don't see, right? They see the job, but they don't see the career and where it can take them. We'll get into that as we talk.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm sure.
this is just lit. I'm really geeking out here. But thank you for teaching, because as I said, you know, before we start recording, I didn't know there was a cap on that. But you know, still having the ability to follow, and
connections are so sacred. When you get up to that 30,000, when you get close to it, you start like really getting picky about who joins your network.
100%. And I think another point why it's very important to be multi-platform and not just have one place, but be available, you know, to other, again, we'll get into this. But
I call that pollination, right?
Yeah.
One network feeds another, right? The bees come and they follow. I get a lot of messages on Twitter that say I follow you on LinkedIn. I get a lot of messages on Insta that are like, I follow you on Twitter, right? You're like, one network, one flower, just, but the bees just go from flower to flower.
I love that. Well, James, coming back to, you know, the man, the myth, the legend, like the journey. So, you know, looking at your LinkedIn, working at Sirius Insight, being a BD manager for Ringlead, board of directors on Uncrushed podcast, you know, working with Sell Better, Mr. JB, etc. In your own words, can you tell us, how did James Awatt Buckley get into sales and what has that journey been like, sir?
All right. So I'll give you the short version. I was a cook for 15 years. And while I was cooking, I had a lot of drug problems, man. I was living in Miami. If you know anything about Miami, you know that's like a haven for dope usage, right? No problem down there. I had a problem, right? So I had to get away from Miami. So I moved to Tennessee. I sobered up, got a nasty divorce, went through this life-changing process, met another woman, and we ended up going to college together as non-traditional students. She had two kids. I had two kids. And it was a challenge, right? So for five straight years, we went to college and we got our degrees while making, and I'm maybe a real number here, $15,000 a year combined. That's what we made, right? And we made it. We made ends meet. We made the magic happen every day. Like we were happy. It was fun, right? I graduated from college, and one of the editors that was on the school newspaper that I wrote for while I was in college puts on Facebook that a software company in East Tennessee is hiring SDRs. I'll say it again, a software company in East Tennessee, just so that you can get that. That wasn't actually said to you on this show.
Yeah.
Anyway, I met Brandon Bruce and Jason Hubbard. They were the founding marketing VP and COO of Cirrus Insight.
Okay.
It was an application that integrated Salesforce with your inbox. I knew nothing of Salesforce. I hadn't been in tech since like 2006 when I left the University of Miami as a telecommunications specialist. That's back in the Windows XP days, for those of you that remember that. Active Directory. Oh my gosh, right? so here we are, right? Where I'm like, yeah, I'm dabbling in tech. And then I moved to Tennessee and I graduate from college, change my life, get a tech job. Right? But I'm calling people. Now, in and out of these kitchen jobs, I did door-to-door sales. You know, sometimes you don't want to be in 113 degree heat. So you trade it out to do a sales job. Well, little did I know, most of those were going to be door-to-door. And I was going to be in 110 degree heat walking around anyway. So here I am, working pest control, door-to-door residential, AT&T, and Winstead Marketing, doing door-to-door B2B, driving around the southern United States, doing mom-and-pop shop upgrades. You know, get another phone line for your credit card machine, so on and so forth. I did really well door-to-door B2B, door-to-door residential.
Yeah.
So here I take this tech job. Fast forward to like 2014, 2015. And now I'm sitting in the air conditioning. There's a ping pong table on my right. There's bean bags, right? Like I'm like so comfortable.
Making
calls in the AC. So I'm 2 days into this job and I'm sitting in a room next to an account executive who would later become our vice president of sales. And his name was Aaron Riley. And he said, man, you sound so good on the phone. You're going to be so good at this. Fast forward like 2 years and I became the top performing SDR. From there, I ended up taking over the SDR team. Our previous SDR manager moved to a more technical role for support. And we ended up, you know, ending up moving from the company. We sold the company and I ended up moving to Ringlead in 2019 at the end. And then I took over a business development team at Ringlead, which was a lot of fun. I got to go to New York all the time. And the people I was working with were just so incredible at Ringlead. They ended up being purchased by ZoomInfo, right? And now they work with ZoomInfo directly. And I ended up working with John Barrows the whole time that I was creating content in and out of this. John Barrows, Morgan J. Ingram, Chris Merrill, Megan Forgione, the team at JB Sales, what was JB Sales, was watching, right? And like, I just thought we were friends and like going to the same events and like we, you know, vibe, like what's up, you know, like we spent time together at events and stuff. Little did I know that they were like, we should bring James on. So I got wind of it and I did nothing, right? It'll be still and just wait and see what happens. So then at the end of 2019 in December, I got a call from John and the words that he used were amazing. He said, the way you make people feel is amazing. You want to do it with me?
Yeah.
And I was like, let's do it, right? You had me at hello. let me know when to put my 2 weeks and I'll put my 2 weeks in. So I did. And we went off and into the sunset and we all did what we were doing. And then boom, 4 months later, COVID-19 hit. I thought it was done, right? I thought it was
same here.
Hey, you know, this didn't work out. What ended up happening was we pivoted and we started this media arm because we had to go virtual. We had been virtual to some extent for some time prior.
Yeah.
Like we were delivering anyway. But this became like a series of webinars and we were doing like four a month, like once a week. And then it was, you know, two a week. And then it was, let's do a daily show. So many naysayers.
Yeah.
So many were like, never going to happen. Right.
Yeah.
Think about your favorite talk shows. They air every day.
Yeah.
Man, they get the ratings every day. Right. Why? Because it's good. Because it's useful. Because you like it. Because it makes you feel good.
Yeah.
We can do the same thing for salespeople. So we did. And that is when Chris Merrill said, let's just go this other direction and let's do sell better. Sell better is currently the the longest running daily sales show in existence. Now, if you had told me when I was out there knocking on doors, or even when I was cold calling Salesforce administrators trying to sell them on inbox integration, if you had told me that I would have landed a job with one of the best sales trainers in the world and then began building a media company with my friends that would become one of the most respected sales organizations in the market today, I would have told you were full of crap. That would never happen.
Yeah.
I don't deserve that.
Jeez. So that is, and I think now my listeners will understand why I feel this is an important episode to have, and it's great to have. That's a fellowship right there, James. I freaking love
family.
That.
That's my chosen family.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there are so many elements within that journey. And again, feel free to push back on any of the questions that I ask here. But I think, but it's one where, you know, you've been very honest at the beginning, like, you know, before moving out of Miami, there was this problem. And, you know, hands up, I've had my demons in the past as well.
We all do, man. We got to own it. If you're going to get past it, you better own it now.
We do. And I think the reason why I want to just quickly touch upon this is it wasn't until I got into sales did I find out about substances and other things. And I've had friends that have been affected by this. I've been affected by this.
I was lucky. I got into it much younger, so I was able to move past it in my adult years.
Yeah. Do you mind if me just asking, like, in terms of the recovery, what was that process like for you, James? And then when you got into that job,
we can talk about it, man.
Yeah, please.
Separation. Separation was the biggest decision I made. I had tried to wean myself off of the problems I had for a long time, and it just, you know, bad habits, right? Bad people. You know, you get wrapped up in stuff, and before you know it, you develop these habits. The best thing you can do is remove yourself from that environment and put yourself in a completely different environment. Now, you can take that to any extreme you like. For me, moving from Miami to East Tennessee slowed my life down considerably. In the country, people are not in a hurry. In the country, there is no hustle. In the country, it's unlikely that you've got a neighbor that's less than a mile away.
Yeah.
Right? So the chances of me being able to have like a network of people to draw problems from, pretty small.
Yeah.
That worked out for me. Some people take it to another extreme. I have a friend that moved to Taiwan. I have another friend that moved to Korea. I have another friend that ended up in Russia, right? These people just needed a different life. That's the best decision that you can make. You think you need that old life. I promise you don't. In fact, you'll find out later in life that you'll switch more times than once.
Yeah.
And have multiple lives. And I believe that wholeheartedly. We all have multiple lives that we live.
100%. And a lot of love and respect for that. And, you know, I think in my early days where I had a few problems, and that stemmed from my days in music and hanging around with rock and roll stars and whatnot, I picked up a lot of bad habits.
No name drops? No name drops, Neil?
No name drops. But I will share something after we record this episode. I've got something to show you. But, you know, going into sales, I met a lot of people where, let's just say, certain substances were just the norm, like in sales kickoffs or, you know, catching up or bonding on the weekend, drinks after like the office hours and stuff like that. And I have seen it grab some people, and I've had to have chats with some people to say, be careful with this stuff, man. Like, there's all about having fun.
I don't even bother anymore, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they want that information, I'll give it to them.
But yeah.
Yeah. I have found that as I've aged, I have learned to allow people to make decisions, not assert my opinion as if it matters. Most of the time it doesn't. Right. So even, and I see this meme all the time, right? Of like, you know, even if you tell me that 2 + 2 = 6, I'm like, you're right.
Yeah.
Good, best of luck to you.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Right?
I see that meme. That's it. When you hit like mid 40s, that's how you feel.
Yeah.
Like if suddenly your circle shrinks even more. Right. And you're fine with it.
Yeah. You're right. And I think the reason why I'm bringing this up is the way, like you said, taking yourself out of the situation. This was one of the reasons why I didn't go out for Friday drinks with the team. This is why I didn't go to certain events, because I was just like, to keep myself safe, I don't want to be put in those environments.
So here's my thing is that I did the same thing for a long time. And then I reached a point where I was able to do it, and I'll just have soda, or I'll just have water, or I'll just have like ginger ale with lime in it. Like, you know, hey, can you make mocktails? Like mocktails. My friend Lindsay Boggs.
Yeah.
You do the mocktails, man. Like, we love that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. Like, alcohol was never an issue for me. It was drugs that was a problem for me, right?
So, like, yeah.
Some people are able to turn that stuff on and off, and I commend those people. They don't have an abuse problem. I had an abuse problem, and that's why I had to separate myself. So I'm not, I want to be very clear. I'm not judging anybody that can dip their toe in the waters and then stay dry.
Yeah.
I'm not judging you.
Yeah.
But I am not that person. So when I see it, I'm ready to bounce. I don't need to be around it. I'm not tempted, but it's best if I'm not in that situation.
You know? Yeah.
Why insert myself at that risk level?
I love it. Thank you for sharing and being honest and open about this. This isn't something I've ever really spoken about on the show.
People need to hear this shit, man.
Yeah, everybody they do.
Goes through it. Like most people have been through that. If you were in a room with people and it was dark in there and you were like, raise your hand if you had a substance abuse problem, you'd be amazed at the amount of honesty in that room if no one can see their hands go up.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Whew, sir, thank you. I appreciate that. So moving on to the next bit of that journey where he was working in this AC'd office, you're working in this thing called SDR, and you got this guy saying to you, you know what, you're going to be really great. Yeah. What was going through your mind where, you know, you'd come out of the kitchen and you're doing this tech thing and it's something called an SDR? Like, how are you wrapping your head around that at that point?
So I was fortunate because, as I said, in and out of the kitchens, I had experience in sales. So when they explained to me that this is just a sales job, suddenly everything was like, oh, you know, I never like, so I should back up, right? As a kid, as a young person in Miami, I also made some calls for some credit card companies. I was a headset wearer, you know, the little boop goes off in your ear and then you talk to somebody and you have a script that you're reading that's pinned up in your cubicle that's this big, right? It's a very frustrating job and you never know who's going to chew your ass on the other end of the phone. Well, the same thing happens in door to door, right? You never know what's going to happen when the door opens.
It could be
a monster that comes out of there. I've been attacked by dogs. I've had guns pointed at me. Like,
Jesus. No.
Yeah. Door to door is a different monster all around, man. I'll tell you, there's so many no soliciting signs. And what do you do? You just blow right by them. That's the way it goes. Right. So you go, oh, I didn't see it. So here we go. Right. Like, as we were talking before, you know, as we moved through these roles, I was very fortunate to land in this role that I kind of had a little bit of a context. It also, and I'll point this out to any hiring managers that might be listening or folks that are shopping to break into tech sales and they want to know what's the best way to get that skill set up, I'll give it to you right here. Go work at a restaurant for a while. And if you're hiring, go out to eat and interview the people that are serving you your drinks and your food. Restaurant people and bartending people make the best salespeople. Want to know why?
Why?
They have no problems talking to strangers.
Yeah.
They have been walking up to them for years. Hi, welcome to Applebee's. What can I get you to drink? Hi, thanks for coming to Chili's. Can I start you off with some fajitas or ultimate nachos? Hi, welcome to Texas Roadhouse. My name's James. I'll be your server today. You can tell that I've done it a time or two.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? These people make excellent cold callers because if you give them something to say, they can say it with no fear whatsoever of what that stranger thinks. They've done it in person forever. Picking up the phone, oh, that's a breeze.
Yeah. Do you know what? You're right because, again, trying to relate to that, my days of working at Pizza Hut, being the guy, we was in a delivery store, so it was speaking to customers, busy on a Friday night, you'd have irate people. But I was also the delivery guy that got on the delivery bike and had to go knock at the doors. And I was going into, you know, different apartments, meeting different people. And there were some very, very fucked up situations that have happened as a delivery driver. But it was that thing of you're just meeting people, you're exchanging, you're talking. And even if I was the guy that dealt with the angry customer on the phone and ended up being the guy delivering it, they wouldn't know that I was the same person. But I just wanted to look them in the face and be like, he's being a dick to me. Here's your pizza. I want a tip.
Here's your pizza. Thanks for coming in. I managed a Taco Bell for a while. And I remember that several times somebody would ask me to remake something that was made incorrectly and I would remake it for them. And then when I turned around, they would throw it at me.
Oh, shit. No way.
Yeah. It's amazing, right? Because these are the same people that worked tech jobs themselves.
Yeah. And that's why I've always had this mentality of, never be a dick to a person that is serving your food because they have a lot of control with your food. But, you know, like if I'm in a restaurant, if somebody drops something or doesn't clean up the table, like when I finish a meal, I pack up the plates together and cups so that when the person comes along, they're able to take it. Always be kind to people that serve your food. That's
number one rule. If anybody's ever never seen the movie Waiting, it's one of the best, most accurate movies about what it's like to work at a restaurant. And if you've never worked at a restaurant, everyone that's ever worked at a restaurant that you're sitting around can tell. Yeah.
I love that. This is awesome.
One of the best interview tips that I ever give is if you're interviewing somebody, meet them for lunch and get to the restaurant early and ask the waiter or waitress, ask the server to mess their food up a little. Here's what you're looking for. How do they respond?
Yeah.
If they say nothing, you can't hire this person. They'll never overcome an objection. They'll never cold call anybody, right? Their level of confrontation is like super low, right? That person is probably not for your cold call team. But if they're kind about it, if they're like, oh, excuse me, this was supposed to be no cheese. If I could just get that fixed, that would be amazing. That's a great person that you need on the phones with your prospects. If they're aggressive, right? How hard is it to take a food order? Don't hire this person.
Yeah.
And that's how they're going to talk to your prospects.
Yeah.
Right? This is all extremely social stuff that you're gathering about this human being that you're about to put in front of the people that are going to give you money. Think about it.
I never even thought of that. That's freaking true, dude. I love that. Sorry, you've blown my mind there just a minute. But coming back into, okay, so this SDR gig thing. So you're working in this tech company, first time round, you're in the AC office, you're on the beanbags. What was going around in your head as to what the hell you were actually doing?
I'm having a blast. That was what was happening for me. I mean, so keep in mind, prior to this job, prior to 2015, I had been making like $15,000 a year. You know, so you have come into this role and, you know, let's talk about the progression, right? I was at Cirrus for 4 years and each year my salary took a step forward and so did my commissions. This led me to loyalty. Stayed because every year it seemed like they wanted to pay me more. Every year they'd put another goal in front of me. I'd knock it down and I'd get paid more. Right. Every year they would put me on planes and I'd travel all over the world representing this organization. Right. And I'm thinking to myself, I managed a Taco Bell a couple of years ago. What is that? Like, this is like, I'm beside myself that this is even happening, that somebody would put this level of trust and faith in me. Right. This type of stuff is the stuff that keeps people at your company. I didn't leave until the company sold. And then I, you know, I made my exit.
I hear that. And it kind of begs a question because, you know, similarly with me, like when I joined my first startup, Zora, I was just like, wow, I get to chat to CEOs. I'm getting paid like 3x what my old retail type of job was. You know, they're actually trusting me to phone people and manage their pipeline and book meetings for my AEs. I felt important, but I felt valued. I felt like
such a good word for it, Neil. Like, people don't understand the value of making your employees feel like they matter.
Yeah.
You will keep your, the average, anybody know the average tenure of a sales employee? It's only 18 months. That's it.
Oh shit.
You have a year and a half to make this person feel like they're going somewhere. Or they're probably going to start looking for greener pastures.
Yeah.
It's not always greener on the other side. You know, I've heard the old phrase, you know, they always think that the grass is greener
on the other side. Yeah.
Well, the grass is always greener where the dogs are shitting. That's the other side.
Right? Yeah.
So don't forget that part. That's a Chris Cornell quote.
Jeez. So what, you know, like I've been that guy that's felt valued, but I've come up because I coach SDRs every week. And sometimes they can get caught up with the progression or the job title, or what other SDRs are doing in other companies and getting promoted straight to the AE. And I sometimes sit there and thinking, like, you're in a really cool space right now, but then it can lead from their management not making them feel important. So were you saying, you know, it's important to make them feel important and part of it? What kind of things could they be doing to really make these team members feel like they're part of something big, James?
Yeah, so it goes beyond the pizza parties on Fridays and the, you know, when somebody hits a quota that a company makes a couple of million dollars on, it's important to not give them a gift card for $50 and say, great job, right? So compensation is obviously something that drives most sellers. We're all in this to make money, quote unquote. But let's be clear about it, right? Most of the time when we come in it to make money, it's because we weren't making enough money before. Right. So we come in for money. Once we make enough money and we have the lifestyle that we want, suddenly it becomes about more, right? Where can my brand take me? What other initiatives can I take? How else can I monetize? Right. Am I ready to take an entrepreneurial step? Like, there's so many avenues that sales can take you in the vehicle of sales, right?
Yeah,
like, that's what I tell people, is like, sales is like a vehicle that can take you anywhere you want to go in life. You know, again, if you'd have told me I was hosting this show I was an SDR in 2015, I've been like, nah, that's never gonna happen, right?
Yeah.
But here we are today, right? Mm. Anything that you think of when you think of this journey of where you're headed can be got if you make the right moves, stay true to the authentic self that you are, right? And remember what your goal is. If you're a leader and you do one-on-ones, are you also coaching this human being, or are you just holding them accountable for numbers?
Mm.
Right? Those two things don't they're not the same. Gabrielle Blackwell, she just sunsetted her old newsletter, The One-on-One, but I think it's still available. I will tell you that that newsletter is fantastic for how to coach not just to the success of the seller, but to the success of the human being. And that, I think the way that I've said it to you multiple times now, pal, is I don't think we can grow professionally until we are willing to grow personally. This is universal, right? This is one of those truths that it applies to everybody. If you're a leader, I hope you're ready to grow personally so that you can be a better leader. If you're a seller, well, I hope you're ready to grow personally so you can be a better seller, right? This is how we advance, not just professionally, but personally as well. When you get promoted, your lifestyle changes, or at least it should, right?
Yeah.
So this is the progression that I think most people are focused on, and they see the top of the mountain, but they don't see the mountain.
That's deep, my bro. And you're right, because I think, like, I was speaking to this young SDR this week where she's only 3 months into her role. And, you know, this was all new to her. But the backstory was she came from a background where money wasn't always there for the family. They went through tough times and everything like that. And she's grateful that, you know, she came out of doing a nursing job and then now coming into tech sales. It's scary as hell. We've been coaching, you know, helping her. And one of the things we was helping her with, creating content on LinkedIn, getting her voice out there, feeling comfortable to do that sort of shit. But we caught up this week and she said, dude, like, the video is going really well. I'm getting a lot of connection requests. And I just said to her, like, how are you doing? And she said, I'm doing fantastic.
Yep.
And I was like, I love that. I said, what's fantastic? She said, my company, my team, I feel like I have a purpose, all of these sort of things. Yeah. But it's that personal development. And you're right, past the number, past the quota. Like, for me,
you notice what happened there, right? Most of the time when you ask a salesperson or a business professional, you know, how are things? If things are bad, they tell you about the financial strain that they're on.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, man, I'm really struggling to hit quota this month. It's tough out there, right? The defeatist language starts to pour from their soul. And you're like, oh, you know, this is sad, right? But when things go well in your personal life, suddenly things start to look really good in your professional life, and vice versa. And that's when you start talking to them and you hear things like, things are going great, but they don't mention the money then, do they?
No.
They never do. You say things like, how are you? And if they're winning, they're like, my family is great. My job is going well. That's the most they might mention it. And then they're like, I started a softball team last week and we're having a blast with that. I played Frisbee the other day with my buddy. Right. We're playing golf next weekend. You hear all kinds of stuff about how great it's going, but none of it is monetary. When you hear about monetary strain, that's when they're like,
shit's hard.
Right?
Yeah. You're so right.
It's hard in all aspects. It's funny how people say money doesn't buy happiness. I completely disagree. I completely disagree. What money buys is comfort. And comfort allows us to find happiness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that because you're right. I think when I got into tech sales and my money went up, I came into this new wealth, which firstly, I didn't know how to freaking manage. So I'd always, you know, as a manager, I taught my SDRs financial intelligence, you know, what happened to do when it comes to your paycheck, think about your bills, don't just go splurge it all out. But I think, you know, going through that journey of new wealth and trying to figure out, you know, how do I take myself further? I've had nothing. I have this new thing. And it's, you know, it made me happy. Like when I used to catch up with my friends on the weekend, Neil, what have you been up to? I've been chatting to CEOs. I've been seeing people launch companies. I spoke to HBO and because of us now they've launched the TV show Game of Thrones. What's Game of Thrones? Oh, don't worry. It's something coming out next year. And I got to outbound them and help it. And like, all of this sort of stuff, these little stories, you know, I geeked out on it because in other jobs that I'd had, I never got to experience these things because I was just a normal 9-to-5 worker bee working into something that's already been defined. And I didn't feel like I had purpose.
But wait, because what you're saying to me here is that your past jobs were not as exciting for you and you were just sort of going through the motions, I hear something completely different coming out of your mouth. Hmm. Maybe it's coming out of your brain. I don't know, but I hear it very loud and clear. And maybe it's you that's changed.
Yeah.
What you want out of what you do every day has changed, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes, like I said earlier, right? Sometimes we take a job because we need a job, but we don't realize that behind the job is a career.
Yeah.
Right? And that part is the part that changes everything about our future and frankly, our past too, right? Because we can leave things in the past super easy once we have that success. Mm. Those things might as well have never happened, you know? And who cares if they come rearing their ugly heads? I'll just take some of my money and run the other direction. Right? Because I have success, right?
Yeah.
Success. I wrote my thesis on success and how people define it, what it looks like to different individuals and their backgrounds. I minored in sociology, so that was a lot of fun. I like to say that I can write about, I have a writing communications major and a minor in sociology. So I like to say I can write about what you're going to do before you do it based on.
Wow. You're right. Like thinking back on those things, for me, it was just, I wanted to get a job because I dropped out of college. I never went to further education. Mm. I used to be a little bit of a tear away and a problem with authority when I was younger. And it was just I just need to get a job.
I was a terrible child. I apologize. Yeah. If any of my other high school teachers are listening, I'm so sorry.
But yeah, it was, I just had to get a job. But when I got into that tech sales thing, I felt like I had purpose. I felt like I was doing something. I was helping a business. Zora back then was completely unknown in Europe. Nobody knew who the hell they were. And we were on a mission to evangelize the subscription economy. I felt like I was doing something. But coming back to that money point, I remember in my early days, I used to spend my commission on nice things. My clothes started changing and all of that. And people said, oh, Neil, you've changed. But I kind of realized that money doesn't change the individual, but it does change the circles that you hang around in and associate in.
So that depends on how you take the phrase you've changed. Some people say you've changed. And my response is, thank you. Yes, I have. Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Right?
And that's all in how you view it, I think.
Yeah.
But when it comes to changing because you became successful, I think it's a choice as to how you'd like to change. Mm. And I think we all choose the lifestyle that we want. Mm. Sometimes the most outgoing and friendly people make it big. And then it turns out all they've ever wanted is to be left alone. Mm-hmm. You never would have thought that about them, but that's what they wanted.
Yeah. Right?
Good for them for getting rich and going and getting it.
Yeah.
Right? Why do we hate on these people? Mm. Why do we go, oh, you've changed? Good for them.
What you
mean is I'd really like to change with you.
You're right. And I think to kind of clarify, with the change, it was the mindset towards money. So, working those jobs before tech, getting my paycheck at the end of the week, a month, just spend it on the weekend. Don't, be very frugal. But then when I started seeing AE's closing 200K North deals and I started hearing millions, I wasn't talking about thousands. Our company were talking about millions. So if I went and bought a jacket for $300, I was like, yeah, that's cool. That's nothing compared to what I've seen these companies and everything make. But then, as I got older and thinking about putting stock options, investing in things, when I had my kid, I want him to have a future. My mindset on money changed quite a lot. So
part of that is because a lot of money, the words a lot of money are relative
to the individual.
Nowhere is this more obvious than when I speak to college and high school students, and I speak to them a lot.
Tell me more.
So it's interesting when you say to a group of kids, how much money do you want to make every year? First of all, most of them have a hard enough time getting past the hourly rate.
Mm.
They don't even think in the terms of annual salary.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ask them to put that into terms, the numbers just vary across the board. You might say, how much do you want to make your first year out of college? And they'll say $25,000. And you'll say, that's not enough money to live on.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you'll go, what's the next number? And then, they go the complete other extreme. They're like, I want to make $1 million. You're like, best of luck to you. Right. There's a financial literacy that changes in us, right? Just like when we start in sales, typically we start at an SMB model.
Yeah.
So we start selling average contract values of $2,000 and $5,000 and $10,000. And yeah, to us, we're crushing it, right?
Yeah.
Then we grow professionally and personally, and we become mid-market sellers, right? And now our ACV is between $50,000 and $100,000. And we're like, yo, this is another ball game
altogether. Yeah.
Enter year five of your sales career and you're probably closing $1 million deals. Well, you don't live in that same ratty apartment, do you?
No.
Probably not.
No.
You've changed?
Yeah.
Indeed, I have. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Do you know where this kind of rings true? Because my old sister, she used to work for local government, and I've been working in tech 10, 15 years, and I always said, come to the dark side. Life can be so much more better. Yeah. And, you know, she used to like make comments of like, no, you spend too much and, you know, you're flaunting this and you're doing that. I said, well, if I've earned it, you know, I'm happy with this, but I just don't see this as expensive things. And in the last year, she's now become an account executive for Microsoft. And I helped her, you know, with her interview, her contract and everything like that. And now I see my sister and I'm kind of proud of her because like she's not living a balling lifestyle, but she's doing good. You know, car's good. My niece is good. Her life is good. She's thinking about property. She's thinking about investing. And I sit back there and I'm like, the money hasn't changed you, but it's changed your mindset because now you're working at a big company where the ACV is huge, like working
She's
for a big.
She's growing both personally
and professionally.
Right now, right? Those two things are symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
I'm reminded of the two trees, first stage, right?
Yeah.
We can talk about it.
Yeah. Please do. But the thing is, right, so like imagine with our audience right now. So, you know, we've got SDRs, we've got salespeople, and they're hearing James and Neil talking about this professional development and this personal development. What advice would you give to somebody that's saying like, James, where do I start? How do I go about this journey of, you know, bettering myself?
Yeah. So one, I'll give you a couple of tips. One, read psych books on how your brain functions, how your mind works, right? Understand yourself. That leads me to my second tip. Become more self-aware. Focus on yourself and how you can improve in areas where you struggle. Find others that have strengths that you are weak in and learn from them. Ask them for help, which brings me to my third tip. Build a community of people that support your goals. Surround yourself with others that are proud of your accomplishments. Say it to them often, and they will say it back to you, and it will manifest in your life as something that blooms into a beautiful, successful life. And that's what you're after. Probably my last tip is lose the fear. The worst, it's like dating. The worst thing that can happen is that she says no, and then I'm right where I am now anyway.
Yeah.
I lost absolutely nothing.
Nothing, yeah.
So what difference does it make? Pick up the phone, dial that number, send that cold email, hit that connection request. Chances are good that person is a human being just like you. And if you talk to them like one, they might actually talk back. Go for it.
It is. It's a case of, you know, taking action. And what's the worst that can happen? They can say no. And it's the same with your prospects and dating and areas of your life. And I think it was one of those things, like when I got into that tech job, I used to be very shy. To an extent of being introverted.
I
didn't like making a fuss, which has changed now. But I used to do this mental thing of saying, well, just say yes, just jump. Whatever they ask you to do, just do it. Even if it scares the fuck out of you, just do it. And I would coach myself in my mind. So when a manager said, hey, do you want to take over doing that? I was like, yeah, let's do it. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'll figure it out as I go along.
Yeah.
And, you know, just taking the opportunity, but it can open so many doors, like on the other side of fear, is just this beautiful place that could do it. But I would hate to be that person that regrets not doing it. I want to find out what that's about, you know.
I think natural curiosity should step in for everything that we do. My CEO and my very dear friend, Christopher Merrill, is noted for saying everything we do in life is a grand experiment. If you approach your levels of success and the way that you get there in that mind frame, you'll find that you can test and find the path that works best for you. I've said it for years. Pragmatism is the religion of sales. Pragmatism is also the religion of success. We have to do what works. It's been a challenge for you. Great. I heard it said before, sometimes circumstances aren't changing because the circumstances are meant to change us. Right? If we're listening to that, and you know, I say like tune into the universe, right? Like listen to what the world is telling you. Then you'll find that it's much easier. The way of dough, right? Or the Tao, right? The way. Like this is you have to feel that way and decide, am I gonna go against it? with some belief that I have, some point of view, some thought, some hypothesis, or am I going to go with it because it's heading where I want to go anyway? Decide, because that's the decision that you make every day when you put your feet on the ground.
That's some deep shit, bro. And I'm going to go a little bit deeper on this. So in the last year, one thing that I've been listening to, like through Spotify and audiobooks, is Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now. One of the biggest fears that I've always had is worrying about the future, you know, a place that does not exist yet. And, you know, the problems of letting go of the past. And with a lot of sales reps I'm talking to, you know, they're thinking about next month quota, and, you know, summer's really hard for prospecting.
It's because we start back at zero every week.
Yeah, exactly. But it was this thing of, like, I really get into the effort when I'm speaking to reps and coaching them and just saying, like, take a bow, be very proud of what you're achieving right now. And with next month, we don't know how it's going to turn, because we can't control prospects. We can't control their point of thinking. So I think the question I'm trying to ask you, James, is, you're right, go out, take action, but how do you reduce your fear of the uncertainty of, you know, what could go wrong or what could be happening? How do you manage that?
Yeah, so this is where extra initiative probably comes into play. I have my hands and my mind in so much of what Sell Better is. And I like it that way because it's kind of my baby. I'm passionate about it. I love it. I live and breathe it just like the rest of my team does, right? Because I take so many extra initiatives and I wear so many hats, my contribution is not ever measured by just one thing. And this makes me very secure in my role. Most people fear getting fired because of performance. That's the reason that they do that. Well, if the only thing that you contribute to your company is a sales number and you give no extra initiative, you probably should be worried about that, because that's the only thing that you're going to be measured on. But if you help other departments win, if you put creative initiatives on the table to be executed that are revenue generating, if you supply feedback that helps the company to change processes that help them operate more efficiently, if you find solutions that could be beneficial for problems that you know exist internally, and you also carry a bag and you miss that bag carrying number by one, but all those other things are happening on a regular basis, I assure you, any manager that comes to you and slaps you on the wrist for missing your quota should be let go, because that person is not supporting you as a human. That person is only holding you accountable for a number. And that's not what leadership is. That's what management is.
James, say what, Buckley? You are the hype man for today. I love
I don't know about that. I just say what's on my mind, man.
Yeah, but I love it. I freaking love it. And, you know, I can relate to it. Like, doing things above and beyond than just hitting the number. I think sometimes talking to a lot of sales reps, like, there is some people that are very big into the numbers, the data, the science of sales. Not so much me, I'll be honest with you. I'm more the performing side of it, right? The human side, the connection.
To get really, really good at the other side too, and be the triple threat, buddy.
But I think this is kind of where I want to meander it into. So, you know, where you were telling us the story of meeting John Barrows and saying, do you want to come and do it with us? And then, you know, with Sell Better and creating this content. So one thing I'm very grateful to be in is a part of time where I'm seeing a lot of salespeople becoming these content creators, doing something more additionally than just doing a sales job and closing deals.
Right. Good for them. We're very supportive.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, thinking of people like Corporate Bro, like yourself, like Leslie, John, and all those teams. And I think I was very lucky that I was here in Europe where it was pretty much old school sales. And North America were inspiring us a lot in terms of content. And I just started seeing more. And it was since the pandemic, since we came out of the lockdown, because everybody was remote, everybody was online. So they had to change the way they were approaching these online forums.
That's right.
And I'm seeing more and more SDRs becoming content creators. And there is, you know, LinkedIn can be a great place, but it can also be a toxic place. And there are some people that are on the fence about this. They put against people, why are you doing those stupid videos? Why are you doing all of that stuff? And then you've got people saying, we love creating content. I imagine we have a listener that really wants to start creating content. Well, they want to put out their voice, and
I imagine you have more than one.
Yeah, there's probably hundreds, if not thousands, out there.
Yeah.
How did you make the transition of doing that job or that role and then getting into the idea of content? And what advice would you give to that person that's thinking about, hey, sure, I want to make some content?
So I got into it accidentally. Like most people, I wasn't really sure what I was doing. And I had this LinkedIn account and I started it, you know, just so that I could earn this SDR role that I wanted. I wasn't on social media until like 2013 in college when I took a PR class and we did a segment on brand building. Long story short, I put a post out on LinkedIn when I was an SDR and I had like 79 connections. No shit. Like that was, I had only had the account for like a year, maybe. It was like my second year at the company Cirrus Insight.
Yeah.
So this was the post. It was an email template post, and it said, wouldn't it be great if salespeople were more honest in their email templates? And this was the template. How about this? Quotes. Hi, prospect. We could do this dance for 10 months where I hit you every couple of days and piss you off, or we could connect for 10 minutes and you can let me know if we should keep talking. How does that sound? Well, I put it out in the afternoon and I just hit share, and it was like one of the first things that I had shared that was like my own thought. When I came back the next day, it had like 200,000 reactions.
Jeez.
My connection requests were at like 99 plus, and I had hundreds of them. My inbox was flooded with people that were saying things like, I scheduled 3 meetings with this template today.
Nice.
I ended up breaking into an account I've been prospecting for months today. I had other people on the other side of the spectrum that were like, I received this email 4 times from 4 different companies today. I was like, what is going on? Right.
Nice.
Well, here's what ended up happening though. I ended up prospecting the people that engaged with that post like indefinitely. For the next like 6 months, it took me to get through that list. I ended up scheduling like 80 meetings, and like I had like a 60% close rate on those meetings. It was bananas. So it happened accidentally, but the result of it was this thought, hey, there's something to me as a seller creating content that's specific to people that I am like, and then prospecting into those humans that engage with that content. And that is how Say What Sales was born. So I was like, well, if I'm going to keep it up, I better give it a name. So I tried to think of something that was catchy. I had just taken a English class in college on like, and we talked about like alliteration and
you
know, things that are pleasing to the mouth that cause chemical reactions in the brain that are pleasing. Say What Sales has a really nice ring to it.
It does.
Because of the SWS.
Yeah,
Say What Sales. It follows a linguistic pattern that is unusual because it is consonant, consonant, consonant. Say What Sales. Normally you see consonant, vowel, consonant, vowel, consonant, vowel in the English language, right?
Yeah.
You can see that when you spell out the entire word. But in our minds, we hear this really clear. And it gives us this dopamine hit. It's wild, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, now what I'll do is I'll say something that I say at the end of all my videos and all my writing and everything, and it'll be my catchphrase, right?
So
people look for when they see me. And I came up with, if you're a salesperson, we're the same person. This is what I said to attract more salespeople in my direction, right?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, I kept doing this, and it started to generate more and more pipeline. And keep in mind, what did I do? I posted a thought every day that was small and that I thought was like funny or, you know, relevant to sales. I held my phone in front of my face for years and just talked to the salespeople that would tune in.
Yeah.
And it was always like, hey, I tried this today and I scheduled 3 meetings. Try it yourself and see if it works. Hey, I tried this today and it sucked. Don't do this, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it started. This became such a constant for me in my routines. Every morning I'd get up and I'd look at my list of ideas for sales content and I'd be like, what am I going to talk about today? What am I going to post about today?
Yeah.
And I'd hold my phone in front of my face and walk on my farm and I would talk to my audience and shoot it out there. And people were like, this is really helpful.
Yeah.
Right. So here's my tip. If you're out there and you want to get started, just put some stuff out there consistently that's relevant to your target audience.
Yeah.
Remember that you're not looking for prospects. You're building an audience.
Audience, yeah.
Those two things aren't the same, but one does become the other to a certain extent. You hope that around 20 to 30% of your audience will eventually convert to a paid client. Yeah. And that is where you want to start. Just begin creating with your target in mind. It doesn't have to be long. Doesn't have to be well thought out. You don't need a million takes of your video. Be yourself. Be authentic.
Yeah.
Get comfortable.
Yeah.
Because this is the new age. And if you don't adopt this flow, content equals connection, connection to conversation, conversation to opportunity, opportunity to sale. If you're not going to follow that path, you are going to struggle to hit your number every single quarter because we buy from those we trust.
Yeah.
Content is an avenue to get trust before they even speak to you. 70% of all buyers look to LinkedIn or some form of social media before they decide to give you time.
100%.
Don't believe me? Look at your cadence and then go and look at who's visited your LinkedIn profile. Find me how many names match.
Hashtag bars, Mr. Buckley. I love that because you're right. With the creating content and, you know, you're not trying to just get your prospects, but you're trying to build that audience. And again, coming back to the point of being multi-platform and being across different platforms, because when I saw everybody posting on LinkedIn, at that point, I wasn't too confident to post stuff or strategies for selling. I did every now and then, but it was Instagram. It was the stories. But what I realized was the people on Instagram are not necessarily on LinkedIn. Similarly, people on TikTok are not always on LinkedIn. And I'm like, I was talking to somebody the other day about this. I said, what I get really excited about on LinkedIn is when I put out a post and a third degree connection likes it. Because that is somebody way beyond my normal network with the people that normally look at my content, but I'm reaching people that don't know me yet. And as I've said to you before, your mantra, and again, I always have to make sure I get this right, where you say clients become friends quicker than friends becoming clients. I want to go out to the strangers that don't know me.
That's right.
And what I found over the years of when somebody's, you know, paid for coaching with me or you know, they end up working with me somehow. One of the questions I ask them is, how did you come across me or why did you pick me? I've been listening to your podcast for a number of years. I've actually been watching your content on LinkedIn. I actually found you on TikTok or, do you know, it was through Instagram. Somebody shared a DM of something you posted and that's why I picked you. But I've been watching you for about a year before I came and actually started using your services. And I love that shit.
Dude, big fan of your content is like one of the easiest ways to break into a new account. And when you cold call somebody and they know who you are, it's amazing. They're like, oh my gosh, what can I do for you? How can I help you? It's the best conversation. You don't have to break down the wall. You don't have to crush down that barrier of, you know, guard my time. You don't have to plow through that gatekeeper. These people are excited that James is calling them, that John is calling them, that Sarah is calling them. Sarah from Pareto. If you're not following Sarah Uy or Sarah Plowman, Sarah Plowman Uy, she just recently got married. But I'm telling you, like, she does like Friday cold calls. Neil, you should have her on the show. I'm telling you, she's probably one of the best cold callers in the game right now.
Yeah.
And I love when she does the Friday cold calls because she is so authentic with it on the phone, talking to these people. And there are many moments where she's like, hey, you're going to hate me. It's a Friday cold call. This is Sarah from Pareto. And they're like, Sarah, I follow you.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
And she's like, really? That's amazing. She will land those deals. She will land those meetings because
they already know about her.
They know what she does. This is a key to success now and moving forward. So if you're uncomfortable with it, get comfortable with it, whatever you need to do. And if you need help, I am available. I will talk to anybody and anyone about this.
100%. I love. And you know, I love that. And again, if you could ever make an introduction, James, I'd love to have her on the show.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think something weird happened to me a few weeks ago where I'm in my local town in South London and I was walking with my son and we had a weekend together and some random guy just approached me on the street and said, Neil. And I looked at him and I was like, I don't know this guy. And I'm with my kids, so I'm super protective. He's like, you're the happy selling guy on LinkedIn. And I was like, nobody in my hometown knows me as the happy selling guy, Neil. I was like, how the hell do you know me? He said, I follow your content. I'm thinking about getting into sales coaching. I really like what you post. We should. And then my son went to me and said, Daddy, who's that? And I was like, I don't know. I really don't know. But he knows Daddy from happy selling work. And he was like, oh, okay.
This happened to me with my family in New York City in
Times
Square, and it was first time that happened to me in that.
It's weird.
It's happened to me in Wrigley Field in Chicago during a a Cubs game, which you think is insane too, right? Like all those people, but this dude picked me out in New York City. This guy picked me out in Times Square and was like, oh man, I'm a big fan of the show. Can I take a picture? I'm walking. Like minutes later, he posts the picture, tag me. I'm like, my kid, he asked my kid to take the picture, not knowing that she was my kid. It was wild, man.
Yeah. Nuts.
But that's what I'm saying to you, right? Like, and this is not, I want everyone to understand, none of this is to brag on our popularity or celebrity status. It's not about that.
No.
What we're talking about here is our ability to be a recognizable name and face in an industry where that serves us well because our jobs depend on us being able to talk to strangers.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about here. So I just want to be clear. Like, we talk about it, we laugh, and it's fun, but we're not stroking our own egos here. We're talking about how well we've been able to succeed because we've put the work in to build a recognizable brand for a specific community. And everybody can do the same. There are too many platforms out there to not be doing it. And that's the truth.
100%. And I think just to add on to that, I think what's really important with your brands is to be approachable, right? So if somebody comes up you to say hi, if somebody slides into DMs, one thing that I loved about you, James, was I knew that you had a lot of followers and you're probably a busy guy in demand, but you took the time to respond to me. And I was like, oh my God, James got back to me. That feeling, like you said at the beginning of the show, it's the, like John said, it's that feeling you're giving to people. And, you know, I've gone into some coaching sessions and I never pitch my podcast to my clients or anything like that. They will tell me if they've listened to it. But the one bit of feedback that made me really happy was they said, Neil, you're the same guy in our coaching sessions that you are in your podcast. And, you know, when you post stuff on LinkedIn, you're the same guy. They said, some people we meet are completely different when the camera's not on they're not always as nice.
Yeah, I attend a lot of church services in this area. Tennessee is loaded with churches, and I like all the different ways that the message gets like delivered, right? Keep in mind, this is a hobby, right? Something I do because I enjoy it and it's fun. And what I've noticed is that as I move from church to church, some pastors, some preachers, some deliveries are static. They're the same all the way through. The Bible study, you know, everything is, and then the sermon kind of have the same vibe. But others, when the lights come on, if there's a broadcast, if they're putting it online, if there's lights and microphones and music, their personality does change quite a bit. They become much more electric. They jump around the stage a little more. They yell and scream. They're much more sweaty at the end, right? These are the same things that when that happens, there's this moment when you're in the pew and you're like, oh, it's a show. Got it. Right. Mm. These are the same feelings that our prospects get when we read scripts to them, when we send videos to them where our glasses are showing the document that we're reading.
And the reflection. If you
laugh, but I'm telling you that I coach people on this a lot and it happens to me often. I literally have a call in like the next couple of hours here with somebody so that I can hurt their feelings about this video. And I tell them that too. I say, okay, I'm going to hurt your feelings. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Right. I turn the recording off and I hurt their feelings. But you know what? Almost all of them come back to me and go, James, I've sent X amount of videos since our call and I have 8 meetings. I am the top performing SDR this month. And you're like, dude, I told you.
Yeah, right.
And that for me, that's my why, man. I get up in the morning for that moment right there.
I love that. I freaking love that. James, this has been one of the most electrifying episodes that I've ever done in the history of this show. So again, I'm very thankful to you.
Minimal editing, man. One take, James.
Yeah, I know, dude. So I think there's two points to put to this. Firstly, I want to ask your 3 tips, and then I want to give a bit of space to give more information about how to find you, sell better, what you guys are doing.
Yeah.
So if we're thinking about that, James, say what Buckley, you know, Miami, life wasn't that great and he's about to start this journey. What 3 bits of advice would you give to a younger version of yourself?
Yeah, so I think the first piece of advice I'd give to myself is get off the hard stuff easy, faster, you know, don't wait. Don't have to leave the city that you like to be able to be sober, right? Like that would be my first piece of advice. But the second piece of advice would be slow down. I always wanted things to happen fast. And I think most people want things to happen fast. You know what I've learned? It's so much better when they happen, right? So you enjoy it much better. You know, they say the wine tastes the sweetest for those in whose troubles that was fermented. I think that's Lord Elrond. Anyway.
Yeah.
But that's my second piece of advice. Nothing I ever gave a shit about happened overnight. So slow down, take your time, walk, don't run, enjoy the view. It's a journey. All those cliches. That would be my other one. My third one would be kinder. I used to be a bully and I was mean, and it was because I was sad and I was angry at the way my life turned out. And then when I met my wife now and, you know, we began a life together, I really did learn what happiness was. Mm-hmm. And that changed everything for me. It's a choice. When you put your feet on the ground every day, what kind of day are you going to have? Are you going to be happy today? Mm-hmm. Or are you going to let things destroy that happiness? I choose the former every day. And those things that come up against me are nothing. They fade away in my happiness. And that's a beautiful life. So I would recommend that you focus on that. That would be my three pieces of advice.
Amen to that, brother. I love that. All right. So I want to give a bit of space now for you, James, to tell us a little bit more about how can we find you, connect with you, and, you know, you being a host at Sell Better. Tell us more about that as well, please.
Absolutely. So you can check us out. Sellbetter.xyz is the website. And on the top left, you're going to see the daily show. There are two places to go there. The first one is to see what's upcoming, and you can sign up and pre-register for any upcoming show that's listed. Right next to that, you're going to see the on-demand. This is where you can go and you can watch all of our past videos. So be specific. There's a little search bar there and you could be like, I want to be a better cold caller. And you could type cold call in there and it'll bring up all our cold call videos. You could be like, I need to get better at negotiation, and it'll pull up all the negotiation shows that we've done. You could do it with LinkedIn Sales Navigator, prospecting as a whole, email, cadence, you name it. Be specific with the skill you want to develop, and I promise you, you're going to find it right there at Sell Better. That's the best way to get the most value. And I'll also say, connect with me at Say What Sales. I am a human being on all social media platforms. You will never get an automated message from one of my networks. And if you do, tell me about it. I want to hunt that person down.
And I can vouch for all of that, and I will be putting all the links to find James within the show notes. So please do check them out, give him a follow, and he is a genuine guy. I can definitely vouch for that. So I also want to say a massive thank you to our listeners, watchers, fans, and subscribers for joining us on this special episode today. If you're listening to this in your local podcast platform, please make sure that you give us a rating and share it with somebody. And if you're watching this on YouTube, what will really help us out is if you give us a like, comment, and subscribe down below. But Mr. James Say What Buckley, thank you so much for coming on this episode. I wish you an awesome weekend, my friend, and most importantly, happy selling.
My pleasure, pal. Thanks for having me.